Chapter 8, Lesson 5, The Woodpecker Effect. When to grit and when to quit. A woodpecker can tap 20 times on 1,000 trees and get nowhere but stay busy. Or he can tap 20,000 times on one tree and get dinner. Seth Godin, The Dip. There are many benefits to knowing a lot of millionaires. Some of them are things you might imagine. Access to a valuable network, extensive experience, capital. But my favorite, hands down, is that I get to talk to them about how they got to where they are. Being able to ask someone how they've accomplished what they've done is an extraordinary gift. It's a true advantage, and it's one that applies to more than just wealth. If you know a great parent, a person in great shape, or someone who's an extraordinary friend, that is a gift. One that you may have not unwrapped. That connection is a chance to find out how they've done it. If you want to find success in any area of your wealth, look there first. The people in your world who have accomplished something you want to achieve are a great resource. Don't pass them by. When it comes to wealth, there is one question I love to ask the millionaires I meet. What are the three things that most helped you become a millionaire? The answers are surprisingly diverse. Millionaires tell me things like, I see opportunities. I'm good at leveraging others. I'm a financial wizard. I'm a hell of a salesperson. Or when I catch them at vulnerable, open moments, they offer different, more personal answers. I was driven to be a role model for my kids. My parents were broke and I'm scared to death of being poor. I'm a workaholic. I just got lucky. Some of those reasons are more positive than others. Some are probably more helpful than others. But in each case, I believe they're an honest assessment of what that millionaire believes helped them most. There are two aspects to understand about this. The first is that you don't have to copy someone else exactly. If someone tells you that the key to their success is financial savvy, that doesn't mean fiscal expertise is going to make or break your financial future. Your path is your own. Your advantages are yours, and your life is unique. It's wise to study the path of others, but even wiser to know how to choose what's best for you. The second consideration is a little more interesting. For all the hundreds of different answers I've received to my millionaire question, there is one answer that always comes up. I never gave up. That answer comes in various forms. I hear responses ranging from, I stuck to it, to, I didn't know what else to do, so I just kept going. But I found that at the heart of every millionaire story is a singular idea. One that I think matters more than almost all others. That idea is persistence. The Woodpecker's Dilemma. Persistence isn't a new concept. At its core, it's the grit to keep going in the face of adversity. Everyone from new parents to marathon runners needs persistence. But when it comes to building wealth, persistence is a lot more nuanced than most people realize. Every wealthy person I've met has had to stick with something, often through extremely trying times. No matter what path to wealth you choose, if the millionaires of the world are right, you're going to have to do the same. Persistence is not optional. You can call it grit or tenacity or plain old not giving up. But the essence is the same. When the going gets tough, the tough keep going. Or as Churchill said, if you find yourself going through hell, keep going. The problem with this advice is twofold. First, how exactly do you keep going? After all, the reason we quit things is usually that they are hard. If it were easy to become wealthy, no one would quit, and we'd all be millionaires. The pithy advice to hang in there seems, well, a little lacking. The second problem is that sometimes quitting is the right thing to do. In fact, while persistence isn't optional, I can tell you from studying the millionaires of the world that quitting isn't optional either. You can't run a money-losing business forever and expect to become wealthy. You can't get a negative or barely measurable return on investment and expect to become a multimillionaire. Sometimes you have to quit. This is what I call the woodpecker's dilemma. A woodpecker can tap in the same place for hours and find nothing, or he can find dinner and live to peck another day. The issue for the woodpecker is to know when to stick with the tree he's on and when to give up and move to another. In other words, should he quit or double down on grit? Wealth building is much the same. It often comes down to knowing which to choose and when. Persistence is a requirement, but so is quitting. So how do you know when to do which? How, like the woodpecker, do you decide whether or not to switch trees? Let's tackle the first problem first. When to call on grit. By dealing with the three biggest reasons people quit prematurely: mistakes, fear, and inertia. Then we'll look at how to know when to quit and move on to greener pastures or better trees, as the case may be. When not to quit. Just as there is an infinite number of ways to become wealthy, there is an infinite number of reasons to quit. However, not all reasons to quit are good reasons. A lot of them, perhaps the majority of them, are bad. Those bad reasons fall into three categories. Bad reason to quit, number one, mistakes. Around 2006, my business really began to accelerate. Real estate was booming and I was picking up huge momentum. I'd gone from opening one office a year to four. It was crazy. Sales were skyrocketing. When you get on a fast train like that, the volume of things to be done is incredible. You can't find and hire people fast enough. You're on a constant search for talent at all levels and tackling an endless list of things to do and problems to solve. At that pace, you have to make bigger and more frequent decisions with what feels like increasingly less time and less information. And that almost always leads to mistakes. In my case, the mistakes were hiring the wrong people and leasing bigger office spaces than we needed. When the market began to crash, I was stuck holding office space and staff we couldn't afford, with people in place who weren't capable of doing the job they were hired to do. I'd gone too far, too fast, almost as soon as I'd launched them. I had to close down two of the offices I'd just opened. There's a lot of talk about failing faster in today's business ethos. And while there is a lot of truth in this sentiment, it completely overlooks just how awful it can be to make mistakes. Closing those offices was extraordinarily painful for me. I had to break deals. I had to admit that I failed. I lost money. And worst of all, I had to let good people go. People who were building their own lives based on the fact that I'd given them a job. Now I was taking it away. Anyone who can make those kinds of mistakes and claim they don't hurt is either devoid of humanity or lying. Mistakes are, plain and simple, hard. In hindsight, of course, I can look at those experiences with gratitude. They did teach me important lessons about getting into business with the right people and knowing how to exit a business. But at that time, they hurt. Badly enough to make me question what I was doing. And that's the danger of mistakes. Each one carries with it not just the pain of the error, but the risk that you might not learn from it, or that it might lead you to quit when you shouldn't. If you quit because of a mistake, not only do you miss the learning experience, but you don't get to gain from that experience in the future. By quitting, you simply stop. There is no way to avoid every mistake. But I have found that when the mistakes happen, and they will, I can use my miracle morning to visit the experience from a place of calm and perspective. That's when I'm best able to reflect on it and learn from it. Generally, that takes the form of questions, a sort of mistake post-mortem where I dig into the experience during the scribing portion of my morning routine. Does this mistake mean I don't love this? Does it mean I'm not good at this? Does it mean my business or plan is wrong? What can I learn from this mistake? How can I avoid the same circumstances in the future? If the same situation presents itself, how can I recognize it? How can I avoid making the same decision? Usually, by the end of answering some of these questions, I've come to the most important realization about mistakes. They are not the same thing as fatal flaws. Mistakes are lessons. They aren't reasons to quit, but reasons to get better. They are what will make you who you are. And I've never met a millionaire who hasn't made plenty of errors along the way. Bad reason to quit, number two, fear. They say that the mind is a wonderful servant and a terrible master. When you're in charge of your mind, when you're the master, you can accomplish incredible things. When your mind masters you, you allow yourself to give in to worry, anxiety, and fear, and they can be growth killers. This has real consequences for building wealth. Long ago, when I was struggling at work, a friend told me, "You know, you're ready aim, ready aim, ready aim. There's no fire with you." He was right. I used to suffer from analysis paralysis. I would agonize over actions and decisions, worried that I might make a mistake. Sound familiar? Or afraid that I'd be rejected or fail. His honesty helped me see that I had to break free from that fear in order to grow. The solution I discovered was to act immediately to do the thing you fear. For example, if the important thing you have to do today is hard or intimidating, say a cold sales call or speaking with an angry client that you've messed up with, the only way I've found to not freeze in the headlights is to act as quickly as possible. Once you start thinking, you become a servant to your mind. And then it's nearly impossible to think your way out. Don't think about it, just do it. When you ask yourself, what's the best way to grow my business? And the answer is, call that prospective high-end client. Then just do it. Take action. Don't think. Feel the anxiety, but take action anyway. What you're developing is the skill of taking action in the face of fear and uncertainty. And believe me, it is a skill. It's a skill that your miracle morning is a perfect time for working on. A calm morning that you start on your terms, at your pace, in your control, is almost guaranteed to reduce your fear and anxiety. It's the time when you can think of that anxious or fearful voice in your head not as a truth teller, but more like an annoying neighbor who keeps wandering into your mental yard. That neighbor used to distract me and lead me to thoughts of quitting. Now, 9 times out of 10, I ignore him. Don't confuse fear and anxiety with the value of what you're doing to increase your wealth. The fact that you feel fear doesn't mean you're on the wrong track. Anxiety doesn't mean your business will fail or you'll fall into financial ruin. Sometimes fear and anxiety are sure signs to push forward, not signs to quit. Bad reason to quit, number three, inertia. The person who takes the most action in the face of fear, even if they're half wrong, will beat the person who never moves forward, every time. The person who never takes action will almost always quit for one critical reason. They lack momentum. When you start doing the important, big, and scary things, you start to see results. Over time, you begin to build proof that bold action delivers results, financially and personally. It's this virtuous cycle that explains why people who have made and lost millions often become millionaires again. They have the proof and the experience that bold, purposeful action delivers results. If they make a mistake, they start again knowing that eventually they'll get it right. Sometimes, especially for those building wealth for the first time, a series of mistakes or a lack of progress can start a negative cycle. The less progress you make, the more confidence you lose, and the more you worry. The more you worry, the less action you take. Before you know it, you've ground to a halt. If this speaks to you, know that you're not alone. Momentum and energy tend to ebb and flow with life. The secret is to minimize the ebbs and don't take them as immediate signs that you should quit. I use mornings as a tool to keep my momentum up by reviewing goals. Sometimes we lose momentum by losing touch with where we're going. It may sound simple, but you'd be surprised how easy it is to disconnect from your goals without realizing it. I use my morning ritual to review my goals once a week. For example, one of my goals is to exercise 240 times a year. Without touching base with my goals and checking my progress, I'd almost certainly lose track. Plus, when I check in, I get a reminder of what inspired me to set those goals in the first place. Maintaining health and physical energy. It's hard to keep your momentum up if you have no physical energy. Eat well every day. Move every day. Use your miracle morning routine to create momentum. Don't fall into the trap of thinking that waking up a little earlier will make you exhausted. Your mornings are a tool to do just the opposite. Review the not-so-obvious principle number 2, Energy Engineering chapter, for more ways to engineer your energy and rebuild momentum. Managing my environment. Energy doesn't just come from within. Perhaps nothing can affect your energy levels more than the people you surround yourself with. Your friends, mentors, employees, partners, colleagues, and customers, they all influence your energy levels, and that in turn can affect whether your momentum spirals virtuously up or negatively down. You need to treat your relationships like a garden, cultivating what you love and pruning what detracts from your life and momentum. If you need help, turn to the Miracle Morning Community. It's a great source of ongoing support, authentic help, and true momentum building. And when in doubt, hug your loved ones. That's energy just waiting for you. When to quit. In 2006, I started a business and lost $1 million. The business was a Spanish language school for recent immigrants. I thought it was a great idea and a unique niche in the market. I was excited about it. But there were a couple of problems. The first was that the timing, in hindsight, wasn't great. It was not long before the U.S. housing crash. No matter how well the business did, there was a good chance I would have found trouble ahead simply because the economy was going to tank. The more immediate and relevant problem was that I'd hired the wrong person to manage the business. While I'd learned from my shingles experience that I couldn't do everything myself, I hadn't quite mastered the process of hiring the right people for certain jobs. In this case, I had the wrong one, and I didn't hold the person accountable enough. As a result, the business was spiraling downward. Before I knew it, we were out of business, and I was $1 million in the hole. In this case, however, there was a deeper issue. The biggest mistake I'd made wasn't timing the market or hiring wrong. It was failing to quit. We've been focusing so far on how not to quit, how to persist and stick with your plan to create wealth. But the truth is, people quit things all the time as a necessary step toward wealth. It's unlikely that everything you do is something you'll stick with, or that every plan is going to be the one that works. Sometimes you have to cut your losses. In my case, I had a chance to get out of the language school business sooner. After about $350,000 in losses, there came a point where it would have been relatively easy to walk away. Instead, I doubled down. I stuck with it and invested another $650,000. Not many months later, the writing was on the wall, or more accurately, I was reading the writing that had been there all along, and I pulled the plug. Money lost, painful lesson learned. Or at least I hope the lesson was learned. I have given a lot of thought to that loss, and to others in the years since, in an attempt to figure out why I didn't quit sooner and how I could learn to be a better quitter. An algorithm for quitting. In Born for This, How to Find the Work You Were Meant to Do, author Chris Guillebeau uses two simple questions to decide when to quit. It's a simple yet very powerful tool to help you decide when it's time to quit difficult, larger things like businesses, relationships, and jobs. The two questions are, 1, is it working? 2, do you still enjoy it? 1, is it working? For our context, the is it working question is a financial one. This is, after all, a book about wealth. If the direction you're headed isn't going to help you become a millionaire, then it's time to quit. Is the path you're on right now going to deliver the wealth you want in the time you want? That's the question you need to ask. And if the answer is no, then it's time to either make a change or quit entirely. But which option do you choose? To find out, you'll need to ask the second question. 2, do you still enjoy it? There's more to life than money. Take it from someone who spent much of his life creating wealth. Money can't be the only thing. And per previous discussions in the Lesson 2, You Millionaire chapter, there's also no easy way to separate finances from emotions. Doing something you hate for a long time isn't a recipe for becoming a successful millionaire. That's where we have to bring something else into the equation, your enjoyment of the process. Are you still enjoying the work, the business, the side hustle, the investment process? Whatever you're doing to create wealth, are you enjoying it? If we plot your answers to both these questions, we get a quadrant that looks like this. It's insightful. The first thing you'll notice is that there's only one circumstance under which you should quit. That's when something isn't working and you don't like it. Otherwise, you should either stick to your plan and double down on grit, or you should make a change. Let's go back to our rental property example. If you're losing money, then it's not working. But before you do anything, ask yourself, am I still enjoying it? If the answer is no, then it may be time to reconsider. But if you like owning property, then there's a host of things you could consider before quitting. Can you remortgage to cut costs? Raise rents? Remodel to increase value or add more tenants? The same goes for a business. A business that loses money in the short term may be able to be resuscitated. Ask yourself, what is the best possible outcome? What is the most likely outcome? What is the worst possible outcome? You don't want to quit something you love that can be fixed. But what if you don't like something or it can't be fixed? Then it's time to do what smart millionaires do and quit. Remember, though, that just as you can quit for the wrong reasons, you can also stick with something for the wrong reasons. Your tenacity can work against you, too. Here are two of the most common reasons for not quitting when we should. Sunk cost fallacy. Remember this one? Our brains are wired to dislike losses. In fact, we dislike losses more than we like winning. That makes us attached to things we already have, like a losing business or investment. And it makes us prone to continue to pour resources into things that we shouldn't, to stick when we should quit. Remember, sunk costs are gone. You can't unspend them by adding more. Fear. Just as fear can drive us to quit something we should stick with, the reverse is true too. Fear of feeling like a failure or fear of embarrassment can make us stay with things much longer than we should. There's nothing wrong with fear. The game is to try to identify when fear is stopping you from making the best decision or taking the best action. The grit-quit tension. The game isn't, as the world would have you believe, to never give up. Nor is it to always cut your losses. The solution is more nuanced. It's a path of balancing persistence with quitting while you're ahead. A kind of grit-quit tension that you need to maintain in order to bring your plans to fruition. To grit or to quit? That is the question. And it's where miracle mornings shine. It's difficult to make a serious decision about whether you should stick to your plan when you're buried in the chaos of a busy day. You either won't be able to even consider the choice, or you won't be able to make a clear and considered decision. Your miracle morning is the perfect opportunity to find the headspace you need. That's the time of day when you can look at the big picture and make a decision that takes into account everything that matters. Persistence isn't optional for building wealth. You're going to have to stick to your plan through daunting obstacles and tough times. But quitting isn't optional either. There are times you're going to have to cut your losses. Your job, if you want to become a millionaire, is to know the difference. Morning Millionaires. Jack Dorsey, CEO of both Twitter and Square, wakes at 5 a.m. to meditate for half an hour and do a workout before heading to his favorite coffee shop for breakfast. Up at 5, meditate for 30, 7-minute workout times 3, make coffee, check in. I sleep from 11 to 5 a.m. usually. Blackout shades help. Meditation and exercise.